With CarGurus Discover, you can skip the filters and describe what you're looking for in your own words. Simply type what you want, and CarGurus Discover instantly surfaces real listings that match your exact needs. It's no wonder CarGurus is the number one most visited car shopping site, according to SimilarWeb's estimated traffic data. Buy or sell your next car today with CarGurus at CarGurus.com. Go to CarGurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's CarGurus.com. CarGurus.com.
This is an ESPN 97.5 Roadshow, live from Radio Row at AT&T Stadium for Errol Spence Jr. versus Mikey Garcia. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hour number two of The Big Show. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. Barry in San Antonio doing comedy this weekend. Nick and I from Dallas as they get ready for Errol Spence Jr. and Mikey Garcia tomorrow night pay-per-view live from AT&T Stadium. You can catch it through Fox Sports pay-per-view and Premier Boxing Champions. Definitely a fight you want to see. Two of the pound-for-pound best fighters in the world going head-to-head at the home of the Dallas Cowboys. So that'll be interesting to see. We're talking a lot of football as we get caught up with hour number one and a recap. And also to let you know, we've got some text messages. Today we'll do a better job of checking those. We had so many interviews yesterday, it was tough to get to the texters. But today, some of the text messages. Hey, fellas, my wife just went in to get all four wisdom teeth removed. So no pressure. I need some solid entertainment for the next hour to an hour and a half while I sit and wait. That's what we do.
That's no fun. Wisdom teeth?
It's not him. It's his wife. He'll be fine. Then she can't talk for a couple days.
Is that how it works? I feel like they've evolved the surgery. It's not that bad anymore.
I mean, you talk like the Godfather when you can't.
Have you
talk.
Had your wisdom teeth taken out?
No, I've never even had.
See, my
cavity,
sister
bro.
Did, and her face was so swollen.
That's what I mean.
But so, I don't think it's like that anymore. I think it's a lot better now.
Well, we'll find out because I'm sure he'll text us back and give us an update on the fact that
she might be miserable. I don't know. Which means he's miserable.
But he's not because she can't talk.
You think so? You think he's happy about this situation? He's asking for entertainment.
We'll
I don't know if he's I don't know if he's in a good mood.
We'll find out. I never know if you are either, but it works out.
I'm never in a good mood.
Question, why do you think the Titans traded for Ryan Tannehill? Well, I think we kind of summed it up. Marcus Mariota has been a good quarterback when he's healthy, just can't stay healthy. This bizarre hand injury he had last year where he had lost feeling in his throwing hand is not exactly going to be conducive to a quarterback who has to get it from center, hand it off, throw touch passes. So he's been dinged up enough that the Titans realize we need a solid backup if we're going to be a good team.
The Eagles benefited from a backup quarterback.
Boom. You look at it. Bridgewater just signs to back up Drew Brees. The Foles situation sent a clear message, which the Packers had to learn the hard way, which is the value in a backup quarterback is never worth anything to a team until they need him. But if you need him and you get the wrong one, it can kill a season, as the Packers did with Todd Hundley, as opposed to getting a veteran. So that's when you look at some of these teams and some of these moves now, and teams are getting smarter and going, hey, if I got to pay $5 to $6 million for a backup and I don't use him, that means your quarterback was healthy. That's great. But if you need him, it's a hell of a lot better than Todd Hundley from UCLA.
Oh, Brett Hundley.
I'm sorry, Brett Hundley. You're right. I'd like to forget him all. I don't want to just forget his first name. I'd like to forget he ever signed a contract.
Yeah, he wasn't a very good quarterback at all.
And he actually got re-signed by the Arizona Cardinals last week. So that just shows you that there's jobs out there for these guys carrying clipboards, but if you really want to be a good team, you got to go too deep at the quarterback position.
Yeah, I saw this headline that said Brett Hundley signing could point to drafting Kyler Murray or keeping Josh Rosen, which I thought was interesting. I didn't read the story; I just read the headline. Backup quarterbacks are important. I don't know if Brett Hundley's an important backup quarterback, but they're certainly important for sure.
Yeah, and the other thing is, too, when you look at what Arizona's got going now, if they do want to go the Kyler Murray direction, the reason why I said there's not that many teams out there that are going to be after a quarterback now in the draft because they don't have a need for them essentially right away. Now, the Jags might think that they're going to groom someone behind Nick Foles, but they've committed a huge financial investment in him, so he's going to be their starter. The Dolphins now have a wide-open quarterback position, and they're rebuilding, so you could see them going quarterback in the first round. You know, the Giants absolutely need a quarterback, though they said they're probably going to keep go with Eli the rest of his contract, which is one more year. You got to believe that the Giants are looking for their quarterback in the future.
I wonder how often backup quarterbacks get laid. How often do you think backup quarterbacks get laid?
Dude, you're an NFL quarterback, and you're not
even
banged
if you're
up,
not the man on the team.
Most quarterbacks were always the big man on campus and the pretty boy and everything like that. So the only difference is instead of putting your hands behind a man's butt and getting banged up, you're getting banged up off the field because everybody knows you're an NFL quarterback.
The life of a backup quarterback. We've talked about this quite a bit. It's a good life. You get paid. You don't play usually.
Here's how I always say it. Look at it. When I talk about quarterbacks from the University of Wisconsin who never did a whole lot when they played there that ended up being backups in the NFL and spent 10 years as a backup, you never get hit. You never pay the price of a, you know, week-to-week punishment of a starting quarterback, and you lasted 10 years in the NFL next to a punter and a kicker. That could be the greatest job ever, yeah, because the punters and the kickers are going to get more money than you at some point, probably if they're good. But as a backup quarterback, you play 10 years. David Carr made a killing in this league as a backup quarterback, won a Super Bowl ring as a backup in this league, not as a starter, and helped to carry on the legacy of all the financial money, the financial gain he had stealing money from the Texans. He made almost $60 million in the NFL, and most of it was spent as a backup.
That is kind of a dumb question on my part, though, because you know minor leaguers. We talk about that movie Bull Durham all the time.
Yeah.
So they probably do get some ass. I was just curious. I'm weird like that. I wonder weird things like that. But, yeah, $60 million, dude, that's I wish I could make $60 million playing, what, half the time?
Yeah, if that.
Or just working half the time?
Just carrying a clipboard, going to meetings, and being a good soldier with the rest of the squad and being ready? It's a nice deal to have, man.
Yeah.
Okay, so other than that.
So there's some, now they talked about this on the Blitz a few days ago, but I just became privy to it now.
Mm-hmm.
But a Gambino boss, Francisco Frankie Boy Cali,
yeah,
was literally murdered in front of his house on Wednesday, 53 years old, and he's the first boss, mob boss, to ever be murdered on a recorded video. Which is absolutely crazy. How did he die? He got ran over by a car.
So he first got hit by a truck. They don't know if the driver of the truck was also the person that pulled the trigger. But from a witness account, and now you say it's on video as well, once hit by the truck, the gunman proceeded, while he was down, to shoot him in the chest 6 to 8 times and then be gone.
Yeah, and the police feel like he obviously did that to ensure his death because he shot him once, and then as he was falling down, he shot him multiple times again to make sure he was dead. But if you want to see the video, I don't know if you're interested in stuff like that, the Daily Beast has the video.
Oh, you're going faces of death on me. You're going straight, let's see the video.
I mean, if you want to. I'm not going to tweet it out, but if you want to.
But you're going
to
watch it.
I will. See? I will. I like crime stories, though. I love that kind of stuff. Like, I love crime boss. I don't like what they do, but I do think it's intriguing to see how they handle situations and how they live in prison after they get caught and all that other stuff. I mean, I think it's an intriguing story, but apparently heroin is the big drug of choice in that family, and that's how they make their millions and millions of dollars. So,
it was definitely an East Coast thing, a very much New York centric thing. But that sends the message that there's probably going to be retaliation. There could be, you know, the other mob group. I don't know if it was the Gambino family. I don't know who it is now, but the Gambino family, and then, you know, we go back to John Gotti days, but there could be a retaliation. We could start seeing, you might get all your crime drama that you want and more, because I would expect that this isn't the only one we're going to see coming out of that area.
It's obviously a fight for power. I mean, obviously they want their hold on the market for drugs, and families compete for that all the time. And sometimes that competition leads to death. Yep.
Yeah, they just want that money. So we'll see how that plays out. But that's absolutely crazy. The other one that I was going to tell you about, in that same regard, calling 911 and freaking out, this lady was driving home with her kids the other night in Cleveland.
Oh, yeah, I saw this. This is funny.
And all of a sudden, she sees a guy running crazy at her and her car down the street, waving his arms, screaming frantically. She rolled up the windows, locked the doors, called 911, was completely freaked out because it was in her neighborhood. It was unexpected. She didn't know what to do. And lo and behold, it turns out that it was a 18-year-old kid or teenage kid celebrating the fact that the Browns got OBJ.
So she calls the police on this 18-year-old because he's yelling in the street because he's so excited for the Odell Beckham Jr. signing. Oh.
And she said she'd do it again. She said, like, no, she doesn't want anything to happen to the kid. But at the same time, she was fearful for her kids and for her safety.
I'd love to hear that audio of that 911 call. Oh, they do?
Yeah, they got it. I put it on the link, but obviously we're on remote, so it's harder to play those things. But, yeah, they got it. And she basically was like, you know, look, from what I saw. And the kid was, like, reenacting what he said and everything. And he was cussing and crazy. And they said, what are you going to do if you won the Super Bowl? And he's like,
What's with people? They're looking for a reason to call 911 these days. Like, you're supposed to do it, like, responsibly. It was like what was the Astros owner's ex-wife? What was her name? Whatever.
I don't remember her name, but I know exactly the whole
thing. She literally approaches this family for taking pictures at this neighborhood that's known to be a hot spot for photographers.
It's over in the Rice University area. It's really pretty. And it's really not her property. It's the median in the middle, but there's actually like a walk.
It's a sidewalk, yep. And that's deemed public property. That's deemed the property of the city of Houston. So they could take the pictures there if they wanted to, even though it's in a neighborhood. But people just look for reasons to call the police. It's ridiculous.
So yesterday we were trying to work on you getting hooked up with Yanette Garcia and the fact that we had Heidi from
Heidi Andrel
from Fox to help us out trying to reach out to get this deal done for you. And you were kind of skeptical and we're not into that so much. So I got another one for you. All right. And again, with our Cleveland Browns theme, at least to start this hour, Brittany Castrataro. And you can tell me how hot you think she is. I'm just going to show you the picture before I tell you anything else. All
yeah,
right?
I approve. Yep.
OK, so you approve of Brittany. Well, Brittany is single.
Is she?
But you don't know you don't have to go to Tinder or one of those dating sites. All right, but you got to shoot your shot the right way. She's out there on Twitter and also on Craigslist stating, "Hey, boys, I'm single. I have Browns season tickets. Take your shot. Make your best move."
See, I don't like that. I don't like it when girls take to Twitter and social media and say, "Hey, I'm single. Who wants me?" I don't like that. I don't like that at all.
Follows it up
Turn
with,
off.
"P.S., they're in the dog pound, so you better impress me." So, Nick, if you're going to the dog pound, you better bring your bone and you better be ready for action.
And I don't want to see the Browns anyway, so even if I was living in Cleveland.
Okay.
Actually, this year is different because they do got some weapons, so I know it's different. But we say that about the Browns every year. It's going to be interesting to see how they pan out, though. I know they got a lot of weapons, but we still don't know. Oh, I'm sure she's getting a ton of reaction.
Some guys are saying, "I already have our wedding paid in full."
Oh, my God.
Other guys saying, "I would jump 1,000 fences for this girl, not going to lie." So the tickets mean that much? I mean, obviously, she's not bad looking.
But how do you impress her if she has the tickets? Like, what do you do? Like, how do you approach that? I mean, you obviously have to be rich, right? That's number one. So, boom.
Females are reaching out to her saying, "Hey, girl, you don't need a man. Want to be best friends?" So, both sexes are going at it, trying to get into those tickets before the Browns blow up this year and probably win the division. So, that was a little funny one that I saw that I thought we should mention as well. All right, we're going to continue to move on. We'll get some Rockets after this. We'll get some other things. And, again, if you want to join the show, 713-780-3776. That's the HR&P listener line. Taking text messages today because on remote from Dallas, it's a little difficult to get to the phone calls. But, of course, you can always reach us on Twitter where it's @TheProducerNick, @PacManJoel with a K. We are the usual suspects. This is ESPN 97.5.
For something to do this weekend, visit culturemap.com to find out everything going on in the city. This is an ESPN 97.5 Roadshow, live from Radio Row at AT&T Stadium for Errol Spence Jr. versus Mikey Garcia. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Back on The Usual Suspects, hour number 2, 3-hour show. You right here from AT&T Stadium, Nick.
I feel like there's scenic views here at AT&T Stadium, just like there's scenic views at Twin Peaks.
Yeah, and by the video stream presented to you by Twin Peaks, where you know what, regardless of what temperature is outside in Houston, 29-degree beers. Presentation can also assist in making scenic views more scenic.
And everything in this building is very scenic.
And sometimes bigger.
And the lighting is better today. Did you notice that?
It is. Yeah, it's not exactly mood lighting anymore. I'm not worried about you reaching under the table because we have more light.
I would never do that. Really? I would never do that to you. To AJ, that's different.
Or to someone at the bar?
But I'd kick them. I didn't do that.
I just asked a question.
Okay. But don't put this on me. Don't make the listeners think I'm misbehaving at the bar.
No, I said here at work, Nick. I didn't
take
it.
I'm a professional.
I did not take it off the grid of the work.
There's so much I want to say about last night, and I just can't. It makes me so mad. like, for the most part, we have a lot of freedom. We can pretty much talk about whatever we want, but there's just so many things that are just, it's just off limits. Can you hear the cheers?
The weigh-in is about to begin here.
It starts at what time,
Jerry World? We're supposed to start at 2, which in typical boxing fashion is starting late. They've allowed a great deal of people to come in to fill up the end zone here as they get the weigh-ins done.
It's a great turnout for the weigh-in.
Yeah, for Errol Spence Jr. and Mikey Garcia. By the way, we had them both on the air yesterday. If you missed any of those interviews, podcastarena.com or ESPN975.com. Click on the show tab. Check out the hours you missed yesterday because we had a ton of great interviews. And again, it's not just about boxing. We had fun. I mean, Nick Sciarra asked Mikey Garcia if he's still going to get some.
I was just going to say, he doesn't believe it. He doesn't believe in that. So he bangs during training camp. Yep. I like that guy.
I don't believe in that.
I think that's stupid.
I got into it with Errol Spence Jr. about the fact that he's a Cowboys fan, and this is actually Packer Stadium South, and had some fun back and forth there.
I loved it. Yeah. You were talking trash about his Cowboys, and he was going at you about Aaron Rodgers.
It was
and
fun.
How he said he folds.
Yeah.
Well, under pressure, he folds.
Didn't fold here when he beat their ass. That's all I'm telling you. So we had some fun. Catch out those interviews if you can. Rockets tonight returning home to continue this homestand against the Suns. And at first glance, you go, okay, so the tough loss to the Warriors, they'll bounce back. They beat Phoenix. They move on. But when you look at the grand scheme of things, and we mentioned it a little bit earlier, the Phoenix Suns are not a team to look past. They beat the Golden State Warriors in Oakland the other night. They've beaten the Bucks twice. They beat the Celtics recently. They're playing better basketball. They are a young team that does not care about reputation and superstars and who's supposed to win the game. They're going to come to play tonight, which means the Rockets have to do the same thing and match that energy level, or they're going to find themselves on the short end of a stick when they're tied in a three-way tie for the three spot in the Western Conference with the Thunder and with the Blazers. And heading down the stretch with less than 20 games for all three teams, every game hyper important now. They have got to focus tonight and send a message early, get a big lead, don't give it back, and just coast to an easy home victory.
Yeah, the Bucks and the Warriors was, despite them being a team that people, I guess teams, they kind of play down to the Suns because they know they've been a bad team all year. I mean, before they beat the Bucks, I think they had won like 15 games or something like that. So, I mean,
no, they beat the Bucks twice this year. They only play them twice. Milwaukee hadn't lost two games back to back.
Was Giannis playing
until recently? Yeah. Oh, he sure was.
On both games?
I don't know about both games, but they beat the Bucks twice. This is a team that's supposed to be the bottom feeder of the NBA. They beat the Bucks twice. They beat a Celtics team that was coming back, trying to find their identity. So you can give maybe say that's not as impressive, but then they went and beat Golden State at Golden State. I watched that game. They had plenty of chances to fold up and go home. Devin Booker stepped up. Several guys stepped up. And they were fearless. They didn't care. If this is the two-time, the back-to-back champs, they just went at them. And Golden State had that kind of look in their eye like, oh, it's just a matter of time. We're still going to beat them. They didn't do it.
Yeah, and you made an interesting point about the Suns yesterday, too. Was it? Yeah, the Suns are a team that could be really good in a short amount of time, despite how bad they're playing this season in terms of a win-loss record. Devin Booker, if they get that guy to play off the ball more, they get a solid point guard, they can really, really build this team to a decent team. You know, I don't know if they'll – I don't know how many players want to play in Phoenix, to be honest.
You got a center. You got DeAndre Ayton, right?
Yep.
So you got a big man. And he's athletic enough. He shoots it well enough where he's athletic enough. He can play the newfound NBA system of up and down instead of the low post play. You've got a guy like Booker, but I think Booker is better at the two than he is at the point guard position. If you can get, and I know that Terry Rozier was a guy that Booker sorely wanted to trade with the Celtics with, but if you can get a true point guard to play with Booker, now you've got guys like Jackson on the wing, another young and explosive three, but you can get some more pieces. You're going to have a ton of salary cap room. You're going to have another high draft pick. You continue to keep building, add some free agents along with all the young talent you're infusing into this organization. Could be a quick turnaround.
And if you get that point guard, you can reduce the amount of turnovers that Devin Booker has. Because, be honest with you, James Harden is a turnover king, but I feel like the Suns are impacted more by their turnovers more than anything else. And he's always been in the top five or six in terms of turnovers per game. He averages like 3, 4, 5 turnovers a game. So getting him to play off the ball, I think, would really, really help.
But the bottom line is, too, though, Nick, is that you know what they do is they play a poor man's Rocket style of basketball. So they're going to play the same exact style as the Rockets. They're going to play up and down. They're going to do all the things the Rockets do. And the only thing is what Harden's going to do on one end, Booker's going to try and do on the other end. Because in late in games, if it's a close game where they need points, they basically just give Booker the ball and they get out of the way.
Yeah.
Now, if the Rockets can defense like their own offense and they play against it every single day, take the ball out of Devin Booker's hands, you should win this game.
Now, another thing we talked about, and this might make Rockets fans upset, so I'm gonna leave this to you. I'm gonna let you upset the Rockets fans, thanks. As always,
because I love them. So there's a lot of bad rap.
There's a lot of national guys out there that are making the argument, right, that Giannis should be MVP. Where are you? You're a Bucks fan.
I've said it all along. James Harden's a regular season MVP to me. I mean, look,
is he close? Is it a close second?
I don't think it's as close as everybody's making it out to be. I think the hype is it's a small market team. It's the underdog mentality. It's a team and a player that no one expected to be where they are right now with the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. But when you look at the streak that Harden put together this year, not only was he the most valuable player because he carried the team on his shoulders almost by himself, but the streak in itself of 30-point games, when you talk about the likes of Wilt Chamberlain, and you look at Wilt, James Harden, Wilt, and Wilt in the top four of longest consecutive 30-plus game streaks. And by the way, the night that he didn't get it, he had 28. That's pretty close. When you look at what he's been averaging, what he's been able to do, and the way he's resurrected a team season to take him from heading for the lotto to a top-three seed right now in the Western Conference, I love what Giannis and the Bucks have done from the standpoint it's better for the league, and Milwaukee's a good up, young and upcoming team. But I don't think you take away from James Harden, to me, is head and shoulders the MVP. But just talking to the national media, even talking to people here, everybody seems to think it's the opposite way and that Giannis is going to win the MVP. What's your thought?
He has a bunch of 25-point games, and he obviously brings tangibles and intangibles that perhaps James Harden doesn't bring to the table, maybe because, I mean, he doesn't, in a weird way, sometimes Giannis doesn't have to depend on, he can depend on his team a little bit more than James Harden, I feel like, sometimes. Is that true? Is that safe to say?
I don't know, because you look at the players around each guy, and I think that from a starting five or the top seven guys in the rotation, I think the Rockets guys are as good or better in most cases than the Milwaukee Bucks.
But they have this amazing record with him scoring 24, 25, 21 points a game. I mean, he has a bunch of 21, 22, 23 points a game, and they do fine. They do fine. They have games where he's scoring 16 and they win.
So what that tells me is you don't give the MVP to a team. So if their team, during the course of the season when the Rockets had all the injuries, played like a better team, his numbers were lower, that means he got more help. That means to me, James Harden deserves it more because of the fact that he didn't have the help. Chris Paul was out, Capella was out, Gordon was out. All these guys were out. The one constant, James Harden was in, and he was on, and he was doing things that nobody else in the league was doing. So again, it's a regular season award, and until they extend it through the playoffs, then we can talk about guys that are clutch at the right time in the postseason. But as a regular season award, to me, you take Giannis off the Bucks, I think they're still a playoff team. You take James Harden off the Rockets, I think they're a lottery team.
I would agree with that.
This year.
Last year, maybe not, but this
injuries
year
injuries included.
Yep, I totally agree. I was really trying hard to get you to say something bad about James Harden and the Rockets, but I absolutely failed.
And I won't. I hate getting the rap that I'm a Rockets hater. I'm not. I'm a realist. I'm an honest person. When I worked for the Rockets, I wasn't allowed to be honest all the time. I had to be pro-Rockets. When I look at this team and I break it down honestly, you can't find me a better regular season player this year or last year than James Harden. And when you look at the numbers, yeah, Giannis may average less, but look across the board. Assists, where it should be all James because he's scoring all the points, he's still averaging more assists. You know, yeah, I'll give Giannis on the defensive end of the ball.
Yeah,
I'll give him the thumbs up.
For sure.
But James has played better defense.
He has. I did instigate a debate between you and Barry regarding Daryl Morey, though. I did pretty good in that.
You did. And again, Barry brings up the fact, well, I'm a Rockets. Rockets hate is showing. I don't have Rockets hate. Daryl and I still communicate. But again, the ability to be honest is something that people aren't used to hearing from me, so they immediately assume that it's the negative, I hate the Rockets. No, it's better for us.
I actually kind of agree with you, though. He did kind of get lucky a little bit, Daryl Morey, in terms of some of the moves, because when you consider what happened with Carmelo Anthony and how much of a failure that was, I did actually agree with you. But I thought it was fun when you and Barry were arguing about it. Daryl Morey did get kind of lucky because he's done it in the past before where he's replenished depth and you thought that was not going to happen. He kind of did it again this year. So are you saying he's lucky still, or are you saying it's skill?
Here's what I'm saying. It's a combination. You can't give him full credit for getting James Harden when you realize that without the Chris Paul trade being vetoed when he went to the Lakers, you would have had Pau Gasol as your centerpiece, the pieces that you used in that Chris Paul three-way deal would have hindered you and eliminated any chance of making the deal for James Harden.
But
at
if
the time.
But if you were Daryl Morey,
yes,
and they vetoed that trade with Chris Paul, would you follow that up by pursuing James Harden, the sixth man?
No, Daryl gets full credit for being Johnny on the spot when Oklahoma City decided between Ibaka and Harden, we're going to keep Ibaka, and Harden wanted out, or Harden wanted a max deal, and they weren't going to give it to him, and he got the deal done. So, like I said, it's not 100% either way, right? It's an overall body of work deal. Has he been lucky sometimes? Absolutely.
Because I'll tell you what, I'm going to be honest with you. When I first heard about the James Harden deal, I didn't like it as a Rockets fan. I was like, really? We're going to pay this guy this much money, and he's a backup? And I was really concerned. I was obviously wrong, and Morey was right. So I think you're right. It's a combination of the two. It can't just be. I mean, you got to make the right picks. You got to study footage, and you got to hope that he actually performs
on
the court.
It's not cut and dried. So what I'm saying is, has he been lucky? Yes. Has he also done a good job? Yes. I'm just not willing to anoint him as the king of general managers like others. So we'll continue to roll on. If you want to get in on that dialogue, 713-780-3776. You can call that number. You can text that number. You can hit us up on Twitter, where it is at Pac-Man Joel with a K, at The Producer Nick. We are The Usual Suspects. This is ESPN 97.5.
This is an ESPN 97.5 Roadshow, live from Radio Row at AT&T Stadium for Errol Spence Jr. versus Mikey Garcia. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Back on The Usual Suspects. 90 in the books, 90 still to go. Second half of the big show coming up right now, right here on ESPN 97.5. We are coming to you live from AT&T Stadium in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, as we are here because of the World Welterweight Championship. Tomorrow night, it's Errol Spence Jr. It is Mikey Garcia. It is live from AT&T Stadium. If you're in Houston and you can't make it to Dallas, or you just don't want to make the drive, well, Fox Sports and Premier Boxing Champions are going to be offering the pay-per-view. It is heading towards a sellout, so you might want to get on that now and order this fight, because pound for pound, two of the top five fighters in the world going head-to-head. It should be a good card and a great matchup.
Having fun halfway through the show. The show cannot go any quicker. It just blows by so quickly. And I'm having fun with you because I'm actually getting you to drink. I can count on one hand how many times we've had drinks together. I think this is number four or five.
So you missed it. Last night you sold me short and said two, and then I had to start reminding you until we got it to a handful or so. So, yeah. But you know what? I do. I partake because I do it for the team. And look, the whole trip has been fantastic. I know AJ sold it as me being the wet blanket when they were on the Blitz before they left. They had me on the air to talk about it, and I proved you heard him in the car. He was expecting the worst. He got the best. We've had fun. So it's been a good time. And by the way, we had so much fun that AJ is now sleeping somewhere in AT&T Stadium until the Blitz comes on at 4 o'clock.
On one of these couches. I really need to get a pick. I keep saying I'm going to get a pick, and I keep forgetting. But, yeah. No, it was fun. And those old fashions?
So, yeah, my parents used to drink those drinks. But you were drinking old fashions all night. My parents would order old fashions. But the one thing I asked you that you didn't have the answer for right away, and it's understandable because I didn't know either.
Yeah, I didn't know.
Every time the bartender made one for you, at the end, he would take a lighter and light the inside of the glass and get like a brief flame, and then it would go out. He'd do it one more time, and then he'd give you the drink. And I'm like, does that do something to the liquor? Does it give it a certain flavor?
Right. So neither one of us knew. We asked Tyler Scott back in Houston.
Alcohol expert.
And he did say, like, the citrus from the orange peel that they spread over the top of the is flammable. Yeah. And then they take the lighter, and that's why you see that flame. But I did read that when you do that, it lightly caramelizes the oil from the peel.
Okay.
And that enhances its flavor, apparently.
So essentially what I was saying was the flame picks up on something to give it a little added something.
It has to. Like, why would you take the time and trouble to go through taking a lighter? Because you literally can't make it without a lighter, right?
Right.
Or is every old-fashioned made with a lighter?
See, that's what I don't know. My parents used to make them at the house, and I guarantee you didn't want to trust my dad with a match when he was already half in the bag.
Do you have those squared ice cubes? I love those things. Or
you mean the old-school trays?
Or the sphere. Love them. Those circular, like, one big cube that you put in an old-fashioned.
No.
No?
No.
They're fancy.
My parents just went right to the ice maker.
Well, back then,
and they used to use the freaking fill up with water.
Yeah, the molds or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I could not. The best thing about an old fashioned is that you can sip it slowly. It's almost like a beer if, as long as you pace yourself in terms of how quickly it gets you drunk. Like if you just spread it out the way I did, it tasted fantastic at the hotel.
Let me just say
at the Renaissance.
Renaissance, yes. You nursing a drink that way was the smartest move of the evening, because when you look at the people that elected to go the other route for the second straight day, night, without naming any names.
And they were encouraging me to drink faster, and I did well.
At a good rate was the smartest move you could have made.
Yeah, because I would have just been loud and obnoxious. I don't want to do that.
I'm not throwing out any other adjectives.
Tracy Cowley wants to... really wants me to take a picture of AJ sleeping on the couch.
Well, you can go find him in the next break if Fred hasn't already found him, and then we can take incriminating pictures that could or could not be used on the internet.
She's telling me do the world a favor and take a picture. I'm not going to do that, AJ.
I still got the one on.
I'll do that to Joel and Barry. I won't do that to AJ.
I still got the one that the last time he did that on that old ratty couch that we used to have in the studio.
Oh my God, that thing is disgusting. Is it still there? It's
no. Like, but I had a picture of him sleeping during our show.
Oh, I remember.
He took a nap while we were in the studio.
I remember that because he wasn't very happy with you when you did that.
It's just blatantly disrespectful to be in the studio sleeping, snoring when we were doing the show.
Those two things were definitely the least sanitary objects in the building. I'm glad we got rid of both of them. The bear. And the couch.
If y'all don't know, we had a, 6-foot teddy bear that sat upon this very well-worn-in leather couch that was in the old studio. Both were put to a lot of usage, not much of which can be disclosed publicly.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that bear was violated multiple times. By somebody. I'm telling you.
No, that bear was my friend.
Fred Fowler is raising his hand. He's right here.
No, that bear was just my friend. Nothing like that would happen.
Are you blaming Jugs? Jugs wouldn't do
something. No, Jugs just cared for the bear.
He's asexual. He wouldn't do
that. Right, so he cared for the bear. So that's why, in his mind, nothing like that would happen.
I love Jugs, and I love the fact that he, what did he do with the Indy 500? He didn't know.
Yeah, Tyler, you can probably help us on this one, but he was supposed to, because of Fred and AJ, they made sure they cleared his schedule and they paved the way for him to be able to get in, I believe it was an Indy car, in a 2-seater Indy car, race for the first time. And he was all excited about it. He was tweeting about it. He was thanking both Fred and AJ about it. And at the same time, when he was trying to do all those things, he forgot to really look at his calendar, and he realized he misjudged it. He had the wrong weekend, and he's going to have to wait. I think it's still going to happen, but now everybody has had to go and backtrack just to try and make their schedule over so that Trey can work this weekend when he wasn't supposed to work this weekend, when he was supposed to drive the car.
Well, originally we had him working this weekend.
Right.
And then he was talking about it, and then I told him, I was like, well, you may want to tell your boss about that. And so he tells AJ on Monday or Tuesday, and we find somebody to replace him for this weekend. Mm-hmm. Turns out he had the wrong weekend, so now he is going to work this weekend, and we have the correct weekend. We know when he's going to be out.
Jugs is
the
best.
That's next weekend.
No, tell him, was it IndyCar?
Something like that. I don't know.
IndyCar 500, I believe, right?
Yeah.
I'm just saying, it's either Indy or NASCAR, because he's a huge NASCAR aficionado.
It's Indy. It's the 2-seater one.
He going to fit in that thing?
I don't know.
He might.
That's a question that you asked. I did not ask that.
I didn't ask it for mean reasons. Whether it be single seat or double seat, that's a pretty tight quarters in the cockpit of those race cars.
Boy, Trey is just a beautiful disaster, is what he is.
I like that. I've never heard that before.
He's a beautiful disaster, is what he is.
Very
he's a
well
great
put.
Disaster.
Very, very.
I miss Trey already.
So let's get, before we go any further, let's get to the Zion Williamson thing.
Well, we got a break, and I think we're having Richard Schaefer coming up next.
Okay.
So
we'll table it. We're going to get to the Zion Williamson thing. We're going to get to the fact that the owner of the Utah Jazz has come out and made a statement at center court before the game last night to make sure that everybody clears the air about the bad fans in Salt Lake City, or at least to some regard. So we're going to get to that as well. And if there's something on your mind you want to get off your chest, we're here for you. 713-780-3776. You can text that number, and or you can hit us up on Twitter. We are the Usual Suspects. This is ESPN 97.5.
Let me drop some shit like this here. At night I can't sleep, I toss and turn, candlesticks in the dark, visions of bodies being burned.
Who's this?
Hey, this is Trey Wingo. You're listening to ESPN 97.5 Houston. Hello.
This is an ESPN 97.5 Roadshow. Live from Radio Row at AT&T Stadium for Errol Spence Jr. versus Mikey Garcia. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
All right, we're live from Dallas. Spence Jr. versus Garcia, Saturday, March 16, by the pay-per-view. You can also buy tickets at SeatGeek.com. A very special guest in the building, Richard Schaefer, in the building with us. How you doing, sir?
Very well, thank you.
You are the leader of Ringstar Promotions, which was started not too long ago in 2016.
That's correct.
How are things are going?
Going very well, building up my young guys, and then obviously helping and promoting these big events like the one this weekend.
Yeah, and we're talking about some of the fighters you signed in the break. How are you able to sign so? Is it because you've been doing this for a long time that you're able to sign so many fighters right when you launched this thing?
Yeah, I've been very selective on who I signed, but coming out of the Olympics, I was fortunate to sign like 15 kids, mostly Olympians, including the super heavyweight gold medalist Tony Yoka, the super heavyweight silver medalist Joe Joyce. I don't think any promoter ever signed for the heavyweight, the gold medalist, and the silver medalist. And then the most talked about Nigerian heavyweight coming out of the Olympics as well, Efe Ajakpa. Some of your listeners might have seen him. He's the guy who the opponent ran out of the ring.
So,
a devastating puncher. I'm building these guys up. Joe Joyce, a silver medalist, is number 5 in the world already. Probably going to be fighting for a heavyweight world title later on this year. So far, so good.
So we know you were working with Golden Boy Promotion for some time. The breakup, what happened? Was it a good breakup, a bad breakup? Are you well, you and Oscar cool?
Nah, we're not. But, we're not bad either. So it's just like it was time to move on. I helped Oscar form Golden Boy back in 2000.
Okay.
And then we built it up, became the largest boxing promotion company. And I was the minority shareholder. He was the majority shareholder. And we had a different vision for the company. And the best thing was, to part ways. And that's what we did. And haven't really talked to him since. I left in 2014. I sort of like turned that page and, as they say, on to bigger and better. And here in Dallas, bigger and better, I think, is the slogan.
You and I were talking about it before you joined us on the air. And we were talking about the fact that ticket sales are going well. Everything we're hearing is the pay-per-view is doing well. And we have talked about throughout this week with everybody from Ray Mancini to the fighters themselves about how do we get boxing back as a premier sport like baseball, basketball, and football, like it used to be when Ray was fighting, when Sugar Ray Leonard was fighting, yep. When you had Hearns and Tommy Hitman Hearns and Duran and all these different fighters. Pay-per-view helps, but doesn't it also help when you start – you mentioned the guys you're signing. These are big-time fighters. But part of the kind of learning process for these fighters when they cross over from amateur to pro is there's as much work to do in the presentation and the press conferences and the out-of-the-ring things as they're in-the-ring things, because that builds that kind of hype and that following from just the general public.
You're absolutely right, and I think that's an excellent question. The day when Sugar Ray Leonard or Ray were fighting, boxing was on free network television,
Wide
World of Sports, ABC. Mm-hmm. Some of us remember those days. And then it's sort of like the network pulled out of boxing and they started to focus on some other of these other sports. Back then, some of them were more emerging sports like the NBA, basketball, football, those kind of sports, baseball, mm-hmm. really pushed boxing out of network television. And as boxing was being pushed out of network television, it was picked up by particularly two premium subscription networks, HBO and Showtime,
yeah.
And became very important there. Now you have to realize it's anything you want to sell, it's about eyeballs. And HBO and Showtime did, or still do, in the case of Showtime, an excellent job promoting the sport and promoting the fighters. But they have a limited audience. They're not like these big networks in 120, 140 million homes. They're in 20, 30 million homes. And it's a much more narrow demographic. It's a premium subscription demographic. So it's difficult to build up these names. But I give you an example. 2 weeks ago on Fox, Channel 11. And that's why I think boxing today is in a better place it has been ever in the last 20 years I've been promoting. And why do I say that? Because you know why? We have a network, Fox, back in boxing. And what will happen? The eyeballs are bigger. It will start attracting sponsors again, which pretty much have left boxing. It's like a snowball effect. And if you look at HBO or Showtime, in the last few years, when did they do a million, a million two, a million three viewers for a boxing telecast? Has been a while. They usually get 400,000, 500,000, 700,000,
yeah,
which is not bad. So I had 2 weeks ago my young Nigerian heavyweight, we just talked about, Efe Ajagba, as the opening bout on Channel 11 on Fox. Saturday night prime time.
Like the very first fight.
It was like 6 o'clock in the afternoon. And we did a million four. We did 1,000,004.
That's over the air, or that's
Free over the air, yeah, on Fox. That's what the game changer is, to have a network back. Just like, why did Sugar Ray become Sugar Ray? Why did Ray become Ray? Were they that much better than some of the boxers today? No. But you know why? They had the eyeballs. They had the eyeballs. And now with Fox, we have the eyeballs again.
That's great. That's great. We're speaking with Richard Schaefer here, the leader of Ringstar Promotions, at Ringstar on Instagram, correct?
Correct.
All right, so the pay-per-view game is obviously the name of the game.
Yes.
Do you think this is going to exceed expectations in terms of the number, this particular fight with Spence Jr.?
Well, it's really from a setup. As you know, I've done all of the Mayweather pay-per-view since 2007. We broke records. We made history. So I know the pay-per-view business pretty well. And I have to tell you, we're sort of like in new grounds here, because it's the first time that Fox, it's the first time that a free over-the-air network is actually promoting a pay-per-view. That has never happened. Again, in the past, it was HBO pay-per-view and Showtime pay-per-view, and they were marketing their events to their subscription base, 28, 30 million homes, right? Now you have Fox promoting it to the whole world. I mean, it's a game changer.
And it's the platforms.
It's the platforms. You see those, like HBO and Showtime, they have the All Access and the 24/7
sure
shows, the shoulder programming,
yep,
right? So those shoulder programming, they get 400,000, 500,000, 600,000 people watching them. You put the shoulder programming, like we've done in this case here on Fox, you get 4 or 5 million people watching the shoulder programming. Now, is that going to convert into buys? We don't know, because it never happened. But I can tell you that much, from a promotion point of view, the early indications are extremely strong. Bars and restaurants closed circuit across the United States are on fire. They're selling like we in the Hispanic market, the numbers are comparable to what we did for Mayweather and Canelo. So huge numbers.
That is big.
Movie theaters. The fight is going to be shown in the movie theaters.
I love that dynamic, by the way.
It's fantastic. Because, you know, if you are alone at home and you want to buy the paper, you go to a movie theater and you watch it there. The pre-sales on movie theaters, they haven't been as strong since Mayweather fought, okay? So you look at the ticket sales here. 35,000 tickets sold. The all-time indoor record in the stadium is 51,600. That record will be broken. And so you're going to have a new record attendance here. The movies are selling, the bars and restaurants. You see the excitement. You saw the turnout today at the weigh-in. So all of these indications, I think, are a reflection of the fact that Fox is behind this. And you turn on Fox, you see the commercials. You see the,
yeah,
them talking,
I was gonna
about
say,
it everywhere.
Showtime, HBO got involved secondary to them in terms of sports as opposed to movies and the other programs they use. When you get someone as powerful as Fox, and you can use the different platforms from social media, which we haven't even talked about, but you talked about the social media aspect. You talked about eyeballs, but also butts and seats, because the more eyeballs that see the product, the more people want to go out to come to some of these events. You and I were talking about the fact this is a 100,000 seat stadium, but even if they cut off the end zones and they tarp the top, you're looking at numbers to where they might have to make adjustments to get more people in here, because people love boxing. They're coming to see this fight and other fights. And with that platform of Fox, it can grow again.
Absolutely. And look, you look at England. England is a very vibrant boxing market as well. And they put boxing there at the Wembley, the famous Wembley Stadium. And Anthony Joshua attracts 80,000 people to go and
it's
watch
amazing
these fights. So if they can attract 80,000 people at the fight in England, come on.
Mm-hmm.
We're the United States.
Yeah.
We can do that. We can do that. But as they say, Rome wasn't built overnight. And it takes a fight like this, such an unbelievable matchup. Two undefeated world champions, two guys in their prime, two top 5 pound for pound fighters, and they're going to put it all on the line. It takes a fight like that. And I believe since Floyd Mayweather left, there has been a void in that pay-per-view segment. And I believe that the winner of that fight here is going to fill that void. This fight on Saturday night is not the thriller in Manila, and it's not the rumble in the jungle, but it is equally as impressive and equally as a legendary night as those two legendary fights were. I call this fight, this Saturday, the coronation in Dallas, because on Saturday night, we are going to find out who is, pound for pound, the best fighter in the world. And that's what it is.
So, speaking of the fight, and we're speaking with Richard Schaefer here, leader of Ringstar. Follow him on Instagram, at Ringstar. How do you see this fight play out?
Well, I mean, that's basically what I'm getting asked all day long. Who's going to win this fight?
I try to save that question for the end of the interview. Well, you don't have to give a pick, but if you see
no,
it...
No, I tell you the way I see it. It really depends what you believe in. There is two sayings in boxing, and they both held true over a long period of time, and there are many examples. One of them is, a great big man always beats a great smaller man. Both of those fighters are great. One is bigger and one is smaller. And if you believe in that saying, that the great big man beats the great smaller man, then Errol Spence is going to win. He's
right.
Clearly the bigger guy. But then there's this other saying, most recently made famous by none other than Floyd Mayweather, and that is, skills pays the bills. And if you believe in skills pays the bills, then you've got to go with Mikey Garcia, because he's the most skilled fighter pound for pound in the world.
That.
So you pick. You know, they say size matters, but Floyd Mayweather showed them different. He showed them that skills matter. It's a 50-50 fight.
Yeah.
That's what you want for
that's
pay-per-view
and
otherwise.
That's what I want.
Do you think, despite him being bigger, that is Spence Jr., how would you grade his defense?
Well, he's a complete fighter.
You think so?
He's a complete fighter. But he's a complete fighter based on what we have seen today. Because Spence Jr. has never fought somebody with the skills of Mikey Garcia. So it's difficult to really say, you know, based on the guys he fought so far, most notably Kell Brook in England, he looked very strong and very good and very skilled. So you haven't really seen many flaws in his game. But that is exactly Mikey's strength. You know, he sees flaws. That's why he took the fight. He sees flaws in Spence's game, and he knows how to expose those flaws. That is why Mikey is so great.
So let's go back to the promotion game. Now, you've been doing this for a very long time. Some people made the argument that boxing perhaps took a dip. You said this is the best time for boxing. Do you feel like there's a period of 5 or 10 years where boxing took a major dip? Now, you said you started with Golden Boy in 2000 all the way to 2014. You made it the biggest promotion company in the country, right?
Yes.
Those 14 years must have been amazing for you, but some people in those 14 years would make the argument that boxing took a dip. Do you see, maybe give me a five-year period that perhaps you think it was the worst in boxing?
Well, you know, there are always like naysayers there, and I have to tell you, during those 14 years, or you can go, you know, 2015, 16 as well, 2015, you set pay-per-view records. You generated nights where one night can generate $500-600 million in one night. Tell me one other sport which can generate, including the Super Bowl, which is going to generate that kind of money in one night. I'm talking about Mayweather and Pacquiao.
No.
And Mayweather and McGregor. So hey, pretty darn good for a supposedly dead sport.
Yeah. I never thought it was dead, because it was just on for way too long. And then obviously when MMA and the UFC kind of had that big rise, people are saying, oh, the UFC is hurting boxing. You can't do, as a boxer, like an MMA guy cannot handle the science of a boxer, because the science that he has in his hands, you know, because that's all they work on.
Exactly.
That's all they work on. So, but I mean, I could talk to you for hours, man, but we have to go to break, unfortunately. Richard Schaefer, promoter of Ringstar. Give him a follow on Instagram at Ringstar. We really appreciate your time, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Have a great weekend. All right, we're going to wrap things up in this segment. Continue to roll on. We've got 2 hours in the books. Still have an hour to go in the big show. We don't want you to go anywhere. 60 minutes on the clock. It's the usual suspects. It's ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.